Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
G'day, Lee. How are you, mate?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
Nah, not too bad, mate. Thank you. I've got a couple of questions here, so let's see how we go. This is from Roxy. Roxy says, I have a Samsung Galaxy Watch that has Bluetooth plus LTE. What's LTE stand for?
That's basically 4G.
Okay, 4G. Okay. Yep. Is there any way I can get it to accept a prepaid SIM? It keeps telling me the SIM has to be postpaid.
Oh, probably not. So when you have a watch that has 4G or 5G capability, basically LTE mobile capability, it needs an eSIM, and for that you typically need a telco that lets you download an eSIM onto another device, like a secondary device, and most of those are typically just part of postpaid connections because they typically charge an extra $5 a month for the privilege. So you need to be on someone like Telstra, Optus, Vodafone, any one of the main ones, and some of the smaller carriers do it as well, but it is a postpaid only option because it's an extra.
Okay, Mitch says, I was using my PC the other day and it blue-screened me. How do I find out what caused the problem?
It's not easy, to be honest. It depends on the type of blue screen you get. Sometimes the blue screen will actually give you more information. It may say things like memory failure. It might give you information about a kernel. A kernel is just part of the operating system, which usually says that there's a driver that's not working properly, or maybe you should reinstall some service patches. The easiest way to find out specifically what it is if it happens again, obviously look at the blue screen, see if it gives you that information, or look for what's called an error log. Windows does store them, so you may be able to find an error log on your C drive somewhere. Everyone's installation of Windows is slightly different, and as I said, depends on the version of Windows you're running. That will give you an idea. Best solution here is to genuinely go into settings and make sure you have all the updates and make sure your drivers are all up to date. And if it's none of those, usually blue screens are caused by an app you've recently installed that's not playing nicely with everything else, or a failure of a bit of hardware, often memory. Memory is a good indicator. So if you're worried that something's, if it keeps happening and it seems like it's happening when you're doing a lot of apps, you're using a lot of processors, maybe you're running a lot of browser tabs and you get a blue screen, it could be a sign that your memory is not as good as it used to be. And in that instance, you might want to just, if you've got a desktop computer, add some more memory or replace it, or if you've got a laptop, it might be best to reinstall that laptop from the beginning and see if that helps fix everything.
Ellen says, how do I know which antivirus software is right for me? I'll add to that question, if you're running a PC as opposed to running a Mac, are there different antivirus software that you should use as well? So I suppose that's a two-pronged question.
So Windows and Mac, you should have internet security in some form. Macs are a little bit more immune to it than others because there aren't as many viruses and they don't open as many, there's less risk on a Mac, but that's not to say there's no risk. Antivirus isn't really what we think about anymore because while there are a lot of viruses, typically internet security is the bigger issue. Will you get malware? Will you get ransomware to have it lock down files? You should have internet security as opposed to antivirus. They're all kind of much for muchness, if I'm honest. The better ones tend to be pretty much anything that doesn't impact your life significantly. McAfee does a really good version. Norton's is owned by Avast now. That's still a very good version. They're in business to block out nasties, so they all do pretty much the same thing. Find one that suits your budget, because keep in mind they all charge yearly amounts. But everyone should have a variant of it. As I said, Mac users are less risky, but if you're not sure that you're going to open the wrong file, you should definitely have some. I try to make sure that the computers I have in the office when we're testing them actually do have some, just in case. You never know what's going to come through your network. Your iPad, your iPhone, your Android, those are relatively secure. Androids are more at risk, for instance, than an iPad. You can't actually install a virus on an iPad, as an example, or an iPhone, but Androids can get them. So if you're concerned, what you can look for is basically family sort of accounts or subscriptions that include multiple devices. So if you've got an Android device and you've got a few Windows computers in your home, grab something that supports the several devices that you're using to make sure they're all protected.
Do these antivirus, anti-software, whatever they call them, what's the right name for them?
Internet security these days.
Okay. Do they slow your computer down?
Some can. The days have long gone where it causes a major effect. It used to be a huge issue, and we used to grade, as reviewers, we used to grade internet security applications based off how much memory they ate. Ironically, they could cause blue screens of death depending on how much they ate. That was a really interesting throwback to the last question. They can. They usually don't. They sit in the tray of your taskbar. They sit in the back, and they monitor things. They shouldn't cause too much damage. Most computers these days have a minimum of 8 gig of RAM, going up to as much as 192 gigs, depending on how expensive your computer was. But a minimum of 8 gig gives you plenty, in many instances, for internet security to do its thing and not get in the way.
We've talked about Apple and their new products. One of the new products, one of the new features of the products that have been launched is the latest headphone tech is helping the hearing impaired. Now, tell us more about this. Are these like hearing aids?
I mean, they're not. I mean, so it's actually in the current generation. Technically, it's just not been rolled out around the world or in Australia. So basically, the AirPods Pro second gen, which have been around for about 2 years, they're still excellent earphones. They basically will be upgraded soon to support clinical hearing grade technology, which is to say, you'll be able to. It's used for soft to medium hearing loss, and it comes with a hearing test. That's how it works in partnership with it. But effectively, the microphones on it, which are normally used for both talking into when you're talking on the phone or when you're sampling the outside world to try and cancel out the world, that's how noise cancellation works, they're going to use those, they're going to turn them on as a form of amplification system, so you'll be able to hear things and still be able to control the sound. It'll have a hearing test inside them as well. It's basically a tone-based hearing test, so you'll run through several minutes of listening to different tones and it will try and create a graded sound for you and then tweak the sound that you hear from your iPhone or your iPad, anything else, it will tweak that sound for your AirPods later on. The upgrade will actually enable people to have kind of like an entry-level hearing aid of sorts. Hearing aids can get ridiculously expensive, some of the more complex ones especially so, but this will actually give people sort of like a hearing aid that is compatible with their phone, so they won't have to jump between them. They'll be able to put their AirPods in, and hear the outside world and hear people talking to them, and then later on switch back to their phone and listen to music, and it will be tailored to their ears. I have checked the TGA database because all of these things in Australia, when it involves medical stuff, and that includes on the new Apple Watch and last year's Apple Watch, a sleep apnea feature that will be rolling out later on, all of these things in Australia have to be checked and graded and certified by the Therapeutic Goods Association. We don't have that yet. So neither the sleep apnea feature nor the hearing aid features are ready in Australia. They're ready for launch in America. They're not ready for launch in Australia. It'll probably take a few months before they launch here. But it's an interesting addition because it's not the first time we've seen companies try to use headphones for hearing aids or try to use headphones for hearing tests. There are two Australian companies, one of which is no longer around, that did all sorts of crazy developments in hearing technology. New Hera actually built the idea of a hearing aid in earphones a while back. They went out of business earlier in the year. And Audira is an Australian company, and they produce an NDIS supplied, or you can get a pair of headphones on the NDIS that actually test your ears and amplify the sound based on the hearing profile you create.
All iPhones, the new iPhones that were released in the last couple of weeks, have a special camera button that also acts as a slider to control the camera, almost like a real camera. So this is a new thing for the new iPhones. Can I ask you a question? I mean, are you still going to be able to use this button on the side of the phone if you put the phone in a case?
Yeah, this is where it gets interesting. So I've got all four of them on my desk. I'm actually talking to you on one of them now while I write the reviews. We're trying to write the reviews as quickly as possible. So the short answer is all the new cases will have either a cutout for it. That's what most of the third-party cases look like. Or if they're made by Apple or Beats, which Apple owns Beats anyway, they come with a little button on the top that kind of extends that button, so it allows you to use it through it. And it's kind of not really a button. It's weird. It includes a button. It's more like a scroll wheel or a touchpad. It feels, you can actually feel it vibrate as you move your finger over it. You'll still, if you use a case, the new case, as I said, most of them come with a cutout for it, so you'll still be able to use your finger through that because it's cut out. And if you have one of the official cases or any company making it with a button on it, you'll have that button extended. Getting used to it's really awkward. I'm still not quite used to it after several days of trying it on all the devices. It's definitely interesting. You can squeeze it and it will launch the camera app from anywhere you are. You can slide your finger over it and it can change functions, and it can also, if you're someone who likes cameras, which I love cameras, you can actually use it to control aperture in portrait mode. You can have it control the various camera profiling controls. It's an interesting addition. I'm not sure it's super needed, but I can see filmmakers who have been using cameras on the iPhone actually really getting into it, because if you're trying to zoom in a camera on the iPhone, it's not easy. You don't get that real tactile control. This does give you it in the video mode as well. So there are ways to use it, but in terms of sleeving it and casing it, you'll have to make sure that if you want to protect your phone fully, that case includes that button as well.
These phones and the cameras that they have are incredible. Point in case, this week we had a harvest moon. I was sitting on the back terrace having dinner with my wife watching the harvest moon earlier this week, and I took a couple of photos just simply sitting at the back table watching the moon come up over the water with a reflection on the water. And the quality of the photo that you get with just a simple iPhone, and the iPhone I've got's a 13, so the latest model 16, I've got one that's a 13, so it's you know, a couple of years old. The quality of the photo these days you can take from just a simple camera in a phone, be it an iPhone or be it an Android, is amazing, isn't it? Just incredible.
It's solid. I did a comparison a few years ago. I think it was during the 13, and I had like an $8,000 Leica at the time. I figured I may as well compare an $8,000 Leica against an iPhone, and it is pretty impressive. The difference is usually glass quality and that extra control. So you don't get that extra control from like a mirrorless or an interchangeable lens camera that you get you can't get that on an iPhone. But it's getting better. The most recent iPhones include what they call a fusion sensor, which is basically it's blending sensors and image stacking with AI to try and create a better image. And I like taking macros. I like taking pictures of things up close with real camera lenses. And the most recent upgrade on Pro models, the Pro Max models, is a 48 megapixel macro capability, which to me is super interesting to use, because typically you don't usually get that close. Like, most of my cameras max out at 24 megapixels, and so now I've got a little bit more to play with, and that will let me get a little bit closer because I'll be able to crop the image down as well. But some of the other things that you're talking about, the moon, I mean, Samsung's come up with clever moon technology. It's a bit of a cheat, but if you have a Samsung Galaxy S24, 23 Ultra from the previous few years, it uses an AI model. So when you take a picture of the moon, instead of going completely bright because your exposure balance is way off the mark, it combines it with an AI model to kind of recreate the moon view from the imagery it has to sample in your image. It's not a real photo per se. It's kind of close to a real photo. You still get the photo you're getting, but it samples the imagery for the moon because we can only view the moon from one angle. But it's one of those approaches, as you said, that kind of makes phone photography just that much better overall.
Samsung, you were speaking of, has a new ring coming to Australia. It's called the Galaxy Ring. Tell us more about the ring as we get more and more devices that focusing on our health, aren't they?
Yeah, so a lot of people don't like wearing smartwatches. That might be because the battery life isn't fantastic. To be honest, I have only seen one smartwatch battery that manages to exceed 2 weeks before. It's fantastic, but it's not a standard smartwatch. If you're someone who likes to wear a regular watch, you know, those classic analog watches you use for time, you might still want a device like a Fitbit. Samsung's venturing into that area with a ring, and what it will do is the ring will provide a heart rate. It will monitor your health in general. It's kind of like a micro version of the Galaxy Watch that your reader had written in before, but you wear it specifically on your ring finger. Or you can wear it on any finger you want, actually. And as part of the actual release, they're advising people who want to buy it to actually test it out for 24 hours, to test out a dummy of it so you can get used to it, which I did. And they'll be making about 7 or 8 different sizes of it in 3 colors. So what you end up getting is basically a compact version of a smartwatch specifically on your on a finger, so you don't have to have it impact your life. It will only work for Android users to begin with, and it looks like Samsung Galaxy users will be the most likely. Samsung's watches, when you have them with an Android phone, they don't always get all the features working unless you're a Galaxy owner. Some of the extra stuff is baked into Samsung's own devices. This might come with that. We've not seen the full version. We're seeing dummy versions to test with, but we know it's probably slated for release sometime in the next 2-3 weeks, so there'll probably be a review by the end of October.
If you're getting sick and tired of dealing with scammers, and let's be honest, who isn't? I mean, almost every week there's a brand new scam out. The government's working on a possible solution. How effective is this solution going to be, Lee?
I don't think it'll be effective, but I think it will actually cause companies to actually finally do something about it. Part of this thing, this scam code that's trying to be put into power, be put in position by legislation, is that when you tell companies like Meta and Google that there's a scam on their system, particularly on their ads network, they just kind of ignore it and move on. I had a conversation with Dr. Carl about this a few months ago, and he's dealing with the fact that constant ads representing scams are going up in his name. You tell Meta about it and nothing happens. That's normal. They take their money and run. This scam system will basically say that once someone has alerted a company to it, they actually have to act on it. And if they don't, they could be held liable to the tune of $50 million worth of fines from the ACCC. So effectively, the scam code won't necessarily protect people from scams, but it will force companies to get a kick in the pants, basically, and say you have to do something about it, because if someone has told you about it, at that point, failing to do something is you basically acting without culpability. So the code is effectively a way to say telcos, banks, service providers like TikTok, like Meta, like Google, if a scam is on your system and you're just making money from it from an ads capability, you can't do that. Once someone tells you about it, you have to do something, otherwise you're held accountable.
Okay, we'll leave it there. As always, thank you for your time on a Sunday morning that you spend with us each and every week. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
No worries, happy to help.
Thanks, mate. See you, Lee. Bye-bye. That's Lee Stark. If you've got any tech questions for him, you can send them to us via email. He's got a website. It's picker.com.au. If you're into all things tech, it's a good website. It's got all sorts of reviews of many different products and other interesting articles as well.